ACATRA Foundation presents the ACATRA Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of ACATRA AI.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves in, well, just an extraordinary life chronicled in Wings of Fire. This is the 1999 autobiography of Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam, co-authored with Arun Tiwari.
That's right. And it's more than just a biography, isn't it? It feels like a blueprint.
Exactly. A blueprint for character. We're talking about the journey from a boy selling newspapers.
Right. In a small town.
To becoming the Missile Man of India and eventually the People's President.
It's an incredible story. Kalam lived from 1931 to 2015, a life truly dedicated to service.
So why is this deep dive so important for, you know, someone listening today? What's the core value for the learner persona we focus on?
I think it's because Kalam's story is incredibly practical. It's not just inspiration, it's a kind of guide. He shows how dedication, real dedication, coupled with humility, how that synthesis can fuel not just individual success, but collective progress too, national progress.
That idea of individual excellence serving something bigger.
Precisely. His life is a testament to that. It asks you, how can your integrity, your hard work, serve a purpose beyond yourself?
Okay, let's unpack that journey then. Where does it all begin?
It starts in Rameswaram, Tamil Nadu, a place you described perfectly earlier, materially simple, but spiritually very rich.
Right. Tell us a bit about his family background.
Well, he was born into a simple Muslim family. His father, Jainaluddin, owned a boat, but was also the local imam. Highly respected. And his mother, Ashiyama, was known throughout the community for her kindness, her generosity.
And Rameswaram itself played a big role, didn't it? The environment.
Hugely. It's a major Hindu pilgrimage site, remember? So Kalam grew up immersed in, well, religious harmony. It wasn't something taught. It was just life.
Ah.
Deep respect for all faiths was just baked into his childhood.
And that value of hard work started early, too. You mentioned the newspapers.
Yes, from the age of 8. Delivering the local Tamil paper, Dianamani, after school, to help the family finances. He learned the dignity of labor, as he put it, right from the start.
But there was a specific moment, wasn't there? An ignition moment related to his future passion.
Ah, yes. The famous story from fifth grade. His teacher, Sivasubramania Iyer, they were learning about flight aerodynamics, and Kalam just wasn't getting it from the textbook.
So the teacher took them outside.
Exactly. Took the whole class down to the seashore. Imagine that. And he pointed to the seagulls, how they flew, how they maneuvered. He used those living examples to explain lift, thrust, all the concepts. Kalam writes that watching those birds right there on the beach, that was the moment. It sparked his lifelong fascination with flight.
An incredible teaching moment. But pursuing that passion, especially higher education and aeronautics, that wasn't easy. It meant leaving Rameswaram.
No, it was a huge challenge. The move to the Madras Institute of Technology, MIT, for aeronautical engineering.
Wow.
It required immense sacrifice from his family.
This is where his sister comes in, Zohara.
Yes. A really poignant part of the book. He needed the admission fee, quite a sum, and his sister didn't hesitate. She mortgaged her gold bangles and chain, her most valuable possessions.
Wow.
Kalam carried the weight of that sacrifice, that love, throughout his studies. It was a powerful motivator.
So he gets to MIT, fueled by this passion and his family's belief in him. And he has a very specific dream, doesn't he?
He did. His ultimate ambition wasn't just to design planes, it was to fly them. He wanted to be a fighter pilot in the Indian Air Force.
But that dream, it didn't quite work out as planned.
No. And this is perhaps the most crucial setback in his entire life. He went through the rigorous selection process in Dehradun. He performed well, technically very proficient.
What?
But there were only 8 positions open for fighter pilots that year. And Kalam was ranked 9th.
Ninth. Just missed it.
Just one spot away. He describes feeling completely shattered, like his entire life's purpose had just evaporated. Adrift, I think, was the word he used.
That kind of rejection, it can break someone or redirect them.
And for Kalam, it was a redirection, but it took a spiritual turn first. In that state of despair, he traveled to Rishikesh.
Seeking answers.
Seeking something, yes. And he met Swami Sivananda, the well-known spiritual teacher.
And what did the Swami tell him?
Interestingly, not platitudes, he advised Kalam to accept your destiny. To understand that perhaps his purpose wasn't to fly the machine, but to create it. To find his path in what was open to him.
So accept the reality, but reframe the purpose.
Exactly. It was a pivotal conversation. It shifted Kalam's perspective from that personal dream of being a pilot to a much larger national mission, building India's technological capability.
And that led him into his scientific career, starting at DRDO.
Yes, he joined the Defense Research and Development Organization first. He worked on a few projects, including designing a small hovercraft called Nundi, though it never really went into full production.
Then the big move to ISRO, the space agency.
Right, under the legendary Dr. Vikram Satabhai. That was a key transition. Sarahai saw Kalam's potential, his drive, and gave him huge responsibility.
Specifically, the SLV-3 project.
Yes, India's first indigenous satellite launch vehicle. The goal was to put the Rohini satellite into orbit. High stakes, immense pressure, bringing space capability from the ground up.
And this project also had its share of, well, dramatic failure before success.
Oh, absolutely. The first launch attempt in August 1979, it was a disaster. The rocket failed, plunged into the Bay of Bengal, a massive setback, publicly and technically.
How did they recover from that?
That's where Kalam's philosophy, perhaps learned later but applied here, comes in. Analyze, don't blame. They treated the failure as critical data. They worked relentlessly, figured out the flaws, and less than a year later, July 18th, 1980, success. SLV-3 successfully launched Rohini into orbit.
A huge moment for India.
Monumental. It made India a spacefaring nation, and it really put Kalam on the map nationally.
And that success paved the way for the work he's arguably most famous for, the Missile Man era.
That's right. Following the SLV-3 triumph, he has moved back to DRDO in 1983, this time to lead the Integrated Guided Missile Development Program, or IGMDP.
Developing missiles like Prithvi and Agni.
Exactly. The family of missiles that became the backbone of India's strategic defense. But for Kalam, it wasn't just about military hardware. It was about self-reliance, technological independence.
Which brings us to his later career, culminating in the presidency.
Yes. In 2002, he was elected the 11th president of India, and he really transformed the perception of that role.
The people's president.
Precisely. He used the office not really for politics in the usual sense, but as a platform to inspire young people, to promote scientific thinking across the country. He was passionate about ignited minds.
And he continued that mission right until the very end, didn't he?
He did. He passed away in 2015 while doing what he loved most, delivering a lecture to students at IIM Shillong. His life was truly one of service from beginning to end.
Let's dig a bit deeper into his core philosophy. You mentioned the synthesis of science and faith earlier. How did he reconcile those two, which many people see as, well, contradictory?
You know, for Kalam, there just wasn't a conflict. He saw science as the disciplined, rigorous way to understand God's creation. The how of the universe.
Okay, and spirituality.
Spirituality was the quest to understand the creator,
yeah.
The why. So for him, they were complementary paths to truth. One explored the work, the other the worker, if you like.
So the lab could be a place of worship, in a sense.
Absolutely. He talked about righteousness in action. He believed that any work, especially scientific work, aimed at uplifting the nation, if done with complete dedication, honesty, integrity, that was a form of prayer.
And his personal motivation wasn't wealth or fame?
No, not at all. By all accounts, he lived incredibly simply. His driving force was, well, a fierce patriotism, a deep desire for India to be strong, independent, and respected on the world stage.
Which connects to that phrase often associated with him, strength respects strength. What did he mean by that in practice?
It was fundamental to his strategic thinking, especially with the missile program. He believed that true national security and international respect didn't just come from economic progress. It required strategic self-reliance.
The ability to defend oneself with one's own technology.
Exactly. It wasn't about aggression. For Kalam, developing missiles like Agni was about ensuring peace through deterrence. Having the strength to ensure your sovereignty wasn't challenged. It was about achieving respect. Because as he saw it, strength is the only language truly understood in international affairs. Technological excellence became a kind of moral imperative for national security.
And this ties into his approach to failure, too, doesn't it? He wasn't afraid of it, which is rare in high-stakes projects.
Not afraid, no. In fact, he had a system for it. He called it a scientific approach to failure.
Meaning?
Meaning failure wasn't the end. It wasn't something to be hidden or blamed on individuals. It was simply data. Valuable data. The only real mistake was to not learn from it, or worse, to repeat it.
So no scapegoating.
Absolutely none. In environments like ISRO or DRDO, where you're pushing the boundaries of technology, things will go wrong. Billions of rupees, national prestige on the line. But he fostered a culture where failure led to immediate rigorous analysis. What happened? Why? What do we change?
That must have created a very different kind of work environment.
It created an environment where innovation could actually happen. People felt safe to try difficult things, knowing that a setback would be treated as a learning opportunity, not a career-ending event.
Okay, this is fascinating. You mentioned earlier we'd look at three specific turning points, moments that really changed his path. Let's walk through those as mini stories.
Right. The first one we've touched on, but it's worth emphasizing, the seashore flying lesson.
With Siva Subramania Iyer.
Yes. Why was it so pivotal? Because it wasn't just about learning aerodynamics. It was about making an abstract concept real, tangible, inspiring. Watching those seagulls gave him an emotional connection to flight that pure physics couldn't. It set the direction of his lifelong scientific passion.
Okay, turning point one, the ignition. What's the second?
The second is the Air Force rejection. This was the moment of, well, potential devastation that turned into redirection.
Being ranked ninth.
Exactly. Imagine if he'd become a fighter pilot. A skilled individual, certainly. But that rejection, that deep disappointment, forced him onto a different path. And crucially, the meeting with Swami Sivananda helped him reframe it. It shifted his ambition from a personal goal flying to a much larger national mission building. It moved him from self to service, in a way.
A forced spiritual and professional pivot. And the third turning point. This one is about leadership, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's the SLV-3 launch failure in 1979 and Professor Satish Dhawan's response.
Tell us that story again, focusing on Dhawan's role.
So the rocket fails. Cullum is the project director. He feels responsible, crushed. The media is waiting. The political pressure is immense. But Professor Dhawan, the chairman of ISRO, steps forward. He faces the press conference. He takes full responsibility. He says something like, "We failed, but I have tremendous faith in my team, and I promise you we will succeed." He completely shielded Cullum and the entire team from the public criticism.
He took the hit.
He absorbed all of it. Then, fast forward a year, the launch succeeds. It's a national triumph. At that press conference, Dhawan pushes Cullum forward. He makes sure Cullum gets the credit.
Wow.
Cullum said that was the single most important leadership lesson he ever learned. A leader absorbs the blame for failure and distributes the credit for success. It shaped his entire management philosophy from then on.
Incredible lessons.
Yeah.
So looking at this whole life, the struggles, the science, the spirituality, the leadership, what are the big human lessons we can pull out for ourselves, you know, facing our own challenges today?
Well, I think the first is clearly about overcoming circumstance with values. His story shouts that where you start doesn't have to determine where you end up. But maybe the deeper lesson is about holding onto those core values, humility, integrity, even after achieving great success. He never seemed to forget Rameswaram, his sister's sacrifice, that grounding.
And the failure aspect, how can we apply that scientific approach?
That's the lesson of resilience as applied science. It's about changing our mindset towards setbacks. Don't just feel bad or blame someone when things go wrong in your life or work. Analyze it. Like a scientist, what went wrong? What's the data telling me? How can I adjust my approach? Treat your own failures as research opportunities for improvement, not as judgments on your worth.
That's a powerful reframe. And finally, his leadership style offers a stark contrast to, well, a lot of modern management.
It really does. The third lesson is about service-based leadership. Leading from beside, not just from the top.
Mm.
Taking responsibility, genuinely empowering your team, sharing the spotlight. It shows that true leadership isn't about ego or control. It's about accountability, psychological safety, and lifting others up. It's a profound model.
It really is. Okay, let's try and boil this down. If someone listening takes away just three things from Cullum's story and philosophy, what should they be?
All right, three takeaways. First, an emotional insight. Recognize the immense power that comes when you channel your personal dreams and your inner fire towards a purpose larger than yourself. Cullum's journey shows that intense effort finds it the greatest meaning when dedicated to collective good.
Okay, ambition into service. What's the intellectual takeaway?
An intellectual insight. Understand that real innovation, especially in complex fields, requires a systematic, almost courageous approach to failure. Don't fear it, manage it. The way they analyze the SLV-3 crash is a blueprint for how to learn and achieve breakthroughs when the stakes are high. Analyze, adapt, overcome.
Got it. Failure as data. And the final, universal insight.
A universal insight. Humility is the bedrock of lasting greatness. Despite reaching the absolute pinnacle of science and state, Cullum's simplicity, his unwavering dedication to serving others, especially the youth, demonstrates that true impact comes from integrity and authenticity, not from status or power.
Join us next time for a new episode, featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.